where our solution shines actually is that since we can analyze broadcast or or tactical feed or anything essentially from a single cam, we can easily do like opponent analytics. So imagine you're a Polish national team, you're playing against Albania in 3 months. So we can analyze last 10 games of Albania and then just provide all the physical metrics, tactical insights, etc.
This is the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast, showcasing outstanding startups and initiatives in the global sports tech ecosystem. From Sports Tech X, the leading source for data and insights about sports tech, here is your host, Roan Malhotra.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast. We're continuing our theme of talking to cool companies within the AI in sports space. And we can't move further in that topic without talking about probably one of the most important areas within AI, which is computer vision and how it relates to sports and computer vision-based solutions with how they are used for player data tracking, for media purposes, for a bunch of different things. Just essentially, it means from a video feed, how you can extract data. And one of the best companies in the world doing that right now is a company called RespoVision. And I've got the founder, Pavel Oesterreicher, on our show today. Welcome to the episode, Pavel.
Welcome, Roan, and welcome to everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to have you on, Pavel. And in fact, I was looking through our emails the first time we spoke. And the first time I spoke to you guys was in 2019, I believe. And it was still from your Gmail account. So this is, I guess, very much back in the origin days of RespoVision, and you guys were still playing around with the idea. And since then to now, in 2023, you guys have progressed really well. So I want to talk about RespoVision, of course, and the journey that you guys have been on. But take me back to the start. What made, first of all, what brought you to this position of setting up a company in computer vision and sports? And why was this an area that you wanted to dive into for you personally?
Yeah, sure. So the reason, or the answer to the question why computer vision is actually pretty straightforward, because I was working in a computer vision field before founding RespoVision. My career brought me there. I started off as a management consultant in a company called BCG. Worked a few years there, gained like business experience, but decided to move towards more technology oriented roles. So I joined we are based in Poland. I'm Polish, so I joined a largest company in Poland doing computer vision consulting. So similar field, but different, technology and application. And I worked as a sales coordinator and then board member in that company, employing 80-100 people doing projects in computer vision all around the Europe and the world, essentially leveraging expertise to help large companies implement computer vision projects. The company is called Stillworks DeepSense AI. So this is where I gained experience in computer vision. But the real interesting thing was that since I joined the company and I spent there almost 2.5 years, I saw firsthand the progress that the computer vision made. It was, I started off in 2016 and then worked until 2019, early 2020. So interesting fact was, the enormous growth in the capabilities of computer vision systems, especially in what accuracy, what problems can be solved. Now that inspired me to think, okay, what will be the next frontier? What will be the next application? Because we work most in DeepSense AI in industrial environment, because if you think about computer vision, stabilization and repeatability is a key, which is easy to find in things like assembly lines. You have the line, you have the lighting, which is all the same regardless of the hour. You have certain conditions, etc. It's easy for the system to have this stability of the of the input, which is important for computer vision systems, whether we want it or not. But it is important. So so first applications of computer vision were mostly around the industry applications, industry use cases. But what will be the next? Yeah, and myself personally, being a huge fan of the sports, also a freak and nerd about it, especially with regards to the analytical side of things. Now, there was a line of thinking that brought me there. I mean, when sports is much more difficult from the technological perspective than, you know, like an industry assembly line application, because the environment changes. You have different lightnings, day and night, lots of movement. I mean, you know, if you think about sports from a movement capture perspective, I mean, there's a huge amount of occlusions, things, you know, players bouncing in one another and stuff like that. So technically speaking, it's much difficult, much harder environment. But, you know, extrapolating the progress that I firsthand was able to see, it brought me to the realization, okay, well, those use cases will be the next that will be that will become optimized and solved by computer vision applications. And that was the reason I decided to found Respo Vision, you know, in 2019, as you rightfully mentioned, you know, us exchanging emails. The company was officially founded in 2020, and we started building a what is called a 3D optical player tracking system. Yeah. So the idea here is to use a camera input. Our philosophy is to base our technology on, by based our pipeline on a single camera input. So use a single camera input and then harvest as many data points as possible, which means 3D data of players' bodies and the ball and the venue. So that's the reasoning. I think it's when I put it that way, it sounds pretty logical. Of course, there were leaps and leaps of faith needed in the process to essentially take this, you know, stable industrial applications and say, okay, well, it will work in sports. But so far we have been proven right. I mean, our system already works for what in Europe is called football and outside of Europe is called soccer, and for American football. So it already were able to capture a very detailed data point. The single camera philosophy also works, which means that the progress is continuing, and the computer vision is one of the most exciting fields in AI right now.
Absolutely. And I think it was arguably with the first area where AI was intersecting in sports, where we saw a tremendous amount of growth in computer vision based applications. Just to be clear, Respo Vision is purely software, right? So this is, the camera is not yours. You're accepting whichever feed that the provider will give you becomes the base of your analysis, correct?
That is correct, and this is again a strong cornerstone of our philosophy. We started as a startup, so the philosophy here was to be flexible as possible, as hardware agnostic as possible, and indeed we are, which means that we can process any single camera feed input. It can be, you know, it can be panoramic, it can be staged view, like cameras next to each other. It can be tactical camera, quite often used by the coaching teams. It can be also a TV broadcast, which is very important because this is like the most commonly found footage. Of course, this is more difficult than just to, you know, be able to place a dozen of cameras around the stadium. But most importantly, it is scalable, which was a crucial item for us. So yeah, we work with a single camera input, and we're striving to get as good output as possible. And so far, we don't see any major discrepancies between what can be harvested with a few tricks from a single camera versus what can be done with a multi-cam input. And we plan to continue this philosophy.
Understood. And of course, like what the camera is watching also doesn't matter. For what I mean is whether it's watching a live game or you're watching training, or you're watching any professional sports, amateur sports, wherever the camera is capturing an entire field of view, you can apply the Respo Vision algorithms to analyze data. What kind of data points are the most crucial ones that you all focus on?
Mm-hmm. I would add one more thing. We also can cover situations where the camera is not covering entire field of view. I mean, in that case, we have to do what is called player ghosting or player interpolation, which means that we are assuming or estimating the positions of the players who are invisible at any given moment in the camera based on their, you know, based on heuristics such as, you know, their position, their tactical position, and their previous measurements where they were inside the camera. So it's not entirely accurate, but it's not totally random. And that's why we can work also, for instance, with a TV broadcast, which broadens the scalability and application of the of the system. So I wanted to mention that, but because that's quite important.
Fair, good point. Okay, so about the data capture itself, what data points do you are the most critical for the success of your product, and or that coaches or teams look for?
Yeah, so essentially, in current let's say analytics approach in the sports domain, we have like a two layers when it comes to the optical tracking. So first layer is what is called a 2D tracking, and which is already used by a 2D tracking per se, and derivatives of the 2D tracking, I will cover that in a second, are being used by a number of organizations. And there is a 3D layer, which is much more data points. For instance, we are capturing 50 body parts of every player, every frame. So again, 50 times, 60 times per second, which means capturing coordinates, 3D coordinates of, you know, shoulders, eyes, and points on the chest, knees, etc., etc. So like multiple points per person. So this layer is only being unlocked right now. I mean, because the in many other cases in sports analytics, the progress or like the popularization of particular approaches went like this. First, there were like pioneers using this particular new technology to their advantage. That was, you know, the case in football with XG, for instance. And actually, the pioneers were in the sports betting industry, interestingly enough. There are new frontiers of analytics. Some start using it, then they succeed. People who are working in that organization spread around the market. They spread the knowledge. They spread the expertise. And slowly but surely, the application and the popularity of particular metric rises. That was the case with a 2D tracking. It happened a few years ago. So, you know, 10 years ago, probably no one was using 2D tracking. Maybe one or two companies in the companies, meaning like clubs or federations in the league in the sports space. Now it's much more common. And similar things happening with 3D.
Just to define these terms. So when you say 2D tracking, you're referring to distance covered, speed of run, things like that, which we are used to seeing, or the trajectory of the ball movement, stuff like that, which we're used to seeing as on television broadcasts.
Exactly. Those things are already in place for a few years. There's of course a number of other metrics that are unlocked by 2D tracking. You know, we can think about formational analytics, like, you know, whether my formation is in a line or a U shape, etc., and I want to analyze it from a tactical perspective. Things like, you know, passes, things like open positions or open passing lanes. You know, many more can be made from just a 2D tracking. But generally speaking, no, it's a matter of putting certain algorithms on top of the tracking data. So technically speaking, it's limitless. I mean, you can have thousands of analytics if you wanted. Of course, they have to make sense. So this is already present. With regards to the 3D tracking, it's the first attempt, which we are quite aware of because, you know, we are providing data to many of our customers. The first attempts are usually made in-house. Which means that, you know, the modeling, the data modeling are being done by in-house by the top clubs in the world, who again, some of them are our customers. And the hypothesis here is that, you know, the first hypothesis is pretty simple. I mean, think about it. You have a 2D tracking data where every single player is limited to a dot, like a point with a two coordinates, X and Y on the plane of the field. Like, how probable is that adding 49 or like 50 or whatever, you know, dozens of more detailed, because 3D is more detailed, coordinates of this player will not result in an increase of accuracy of the models. If you are want to predict performance, you know, recruitment capability, or recruitment potential of players, etc. How possible is that? That all those points are noise and like they are like useless. Well, it's not very probable. So that's the first point, like the simple logic leading us, you know, more data, more accuracy leads to better results as it used to in the past. But there's also more practical angle to it. I mean, we can start talking particular metrics which are being unlocked. So I'll give you an example. XG is a good example. So XG started off as a simple metric where the place of the shot was being taken in consideration and then calculated the probability of scoring a goal. I'm talking football right now. Yeah, so XG is a XG score for a particular team is a sum of probabilities of their shots on goal upon being made. So when the shot was made, there is we attach a probability that the goal can be scored from this shot. And we sum up all the shots from the game and we have an XG for a team. And for viewers who might not be familiar with that, the beauty of XG lies in the fact that low-scoring games, such as football, where relatively low number of scoring situations, scoring opportunities determines the outcome of a game. So football games are, 1-0, 2-1, etc. Whereas basketball games are like 120 to 108, which means less variance. In football, we have higher variance because low number of the games might mean that a weak team will score one goal and the good team will score zero goals. And therefore, weak team wins. In basketball, in volleyball, it's much less probable because of the high number of the points being scored. So XG can take this variance off because XG is not about an actual goal scoring opportunities, but probability of goal scoring opportunities.
And expected opportunities, yes.
Exactly. So the first attempts at XG were very simple. I mean, they just took into consideration a place from where the shot was taken. And if the place was close to the goal, then the probability was higher, maybe 15%, 20%. If the place was, outside the box, the probability was 3%, 2%. So, but by using that, you can actually get a little bit better understanding of what the game looked like, not what it ended like, because that's the score, that's being told by the score, but what it looked like. And the XG right now, well, the basic XG was like this. Then it was improved by number of additional data points. There are huge progress being made in XG right now. You have companies like Understat, StatsBomb experimenting with adding additional points, etc., which are all commendable efforts, and they are allowing us to better understand the game. But there's also a thing which can be directly taken from a 3D understanding of the game. Think about it. I mean, how different is a shot taken from a same place where the player has the ball lying on the ground and can prepare and just shoot it with a feet, whereas the ball flies towards the player and the player has to either dive in to take a header or just do a very difficult volley. I mean, this is the same situation in the 2D perspective because the ball is in the same place on the 2D plane, but it's vastly different. I mean, one can have, if there is an open goal, one can have 60, 80% goal scoring opportunity, the standing ball, and the other one can have 5% if it's a fast moving ball and the player has to, do something. So, similarly with the defender's positioning. I mean, when the defender is running towards the player, has him in check visually, it's much different when the defender is turned to the right and tries to look at the other opponent. This means that the shooter might have much different options and opportunities with regards to this particular shot in this particular place. So there is a lot of interesting data points that are being added by 3D understanding. This was just an example of an XG. But what about a particular movement movement patterns, things like including the speed of turns, press. Team pressing analytics, which again requires understanding of human body movements. What about the very interesting area of research, which is now being more and more becoming more and more popular? Area scans. I mean, there is this hypothesis that especially if you remember, Xavi or Iniesta, that the way you look and scan the field with your eyes influences the accuracy of the passes. Do we know how? We have absolutely no idea how. Why? Because scans, area scans, head movements were so difficult to capture manually or in 2D tracking that we have no idea why. But with 3D tracking, we're actually running that experiment right now at RosPoVision. So we are analyzing the accuracy of the pass and the final result of the play, depending on the type, length, and the specifics of the ARIA scans. I mean, and if we find a, of course it's an if, but if we find a correlation, that it will be a very strong indicator for, you know, for tactical and coaching coaching analytics for, you know, for midfield players or players trying to, you know, to attempting a pass, etc. So, and those are just first examples. And my point here, I'm wrapping it up. My point here is that we will have more of those. And with time, we will start seeing a very direct use cases for 3D analytics. And with that in mind, 3D analytics, 3D tracking will become more and more popular. And it will be very straightforward to use 3D tracking to arrive at particular result, which is what's the most important. I mean, this happens for a reason. I mean, the analytics happen for a reason. They have to serve, you know, a purpose, a competitive advantage. So once we establish those links between 3D tracking and competitive advantages, as we establish with a 2D tracking, we will see much more an increasing popularity of those metrics.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about quantifying the intangibles, what we were unable to assign a value to in maybe years gone by, what made a player like Xavi or Iniesta or the best players that came before them, is giving them clear data points or points of reference that a young player can look at and then say, hey, if I improve this specific area, then I can improve my overall play. And that comes from first capturing the data, which is what you mentioned, 3D data capturing allows you to do.
Stay up to date with all things sports tech and sign up for our newsletter. You'll get a monthly breakdown of the most important developments in the global sports tech ecosystem, paired with exclusive interviews with industry leaders. Get all of this and more delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up today at sportstechx.com.
You mentioned customers, so let's talk about some success cases. Who is RespoVision working with right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so funnily enough, it's some of them I can talk about, some of them I cannot talk about because of the NDA. So let me try to address it like on a higher level. So we are active in football and American football, or soccer and American football. And within the American football space, we're working closely in, let's call it, a professional league environment without pointing names. We're offering our tracking services and tracking analytics for over a year right now. So we have a long-term partnerships with the environment here. Funnily enough, it's a very rewarding exercise because American football is even more difficult than football. If you think from the computer vision perspective, think about this typical situation in American football. There's no players stuck one on another. It's a set pieces play. The actions are quite short and fast, and there is many humans involved. I mean, on average, there are much more players on the field than in football. So it was a very rewarding from the technological perspective to build a system on American football. But it's much American football is a set piece play, as in you plan much more than in football. In football, there are like high level directions. Of course, you have a tactical formation, etc. But in American football, you have actually precise setup of particular plays, which means that the analytics can even influence it in much more than because you have set play by set play, which you analyze and try to optimize. So we work. What I can say is like within the professional league environment. Sorry that I couldn't share much more with. Within the football space, we work with a few of the top of the Premier League clubs. Again, let's call them top Premier League clubs, who usually want to use the data in-house. Yeah? And that's the name of the game in football, especially with regards to the 3D data. If you look at the clubs, and if you look at the, that's an interesting actually insight. So if you look at the clubs, you can look even at the, you know, at the LinkedIn pages. And if you see many persons, employees with titles of like data scientist or computer vision engineer or data pipeline processing expert or something like that, it means that their teams have in-house data science capabilities. And it means that if you have in-house data science capabilities, usually, or like in from our experience in almost every case, you want to create model yourself to, and then improve it to gain competitive advantage and to have this, you know, this advantage over competitors. So we are selling our data to such clubs, especially in English Premier League. Again, you know, R&D investment follows the money. So no surprise here. The English Premier League is very. Is very professional here. We are also working with a few other engagements. One of them is, for instance, Polish national team. I can freely talk about it, where we are offering 2D and 3D tracking data plus specific statistics, especially regarding the player physical metrics, and opponent physical metrics, etc. Where our solution shines actually is that since we can analyze broadcast or tactical feed or anything essentially from a single cam, we can easily do like opponent analytics. So imagine you're a Polish national team, you're playing against Albania in 3 months. So we can analyze, you know, last 10 games of Albania and then just, you know, just provide all the physical metrics, tactical insights, etc. based on those games, because this is what we can do. So here is the high level setup. I'm so sorry that I cannot, you know, disclose names, but you know, we're under a quite specific NDAs.
It's fine. I'm glad we at least got some names from you, the Polish national team, but mainly, of course, kudos to you and the team for working with big names in the top leagues, even if you cannot name them. That's fantastic to hear in terms of progress for you guys. But just to also be clear, you're essentially a B2B business which provides data analytics solutions to these teams, leagues. But beyond the player performance area, is there anything else that you touch?
Yeah, thanks for asking that, because there is another area which is extremely exciting and which I want to touch upon. So yeah, in that space, we are B2B. So we are selling to businesses. In our case, those are clubs and federations or leagues. There is also a league front which is very interesting for us, and we are developing it actively, and I hope that we'll have some announcements to share soon. But there is another front which let's call it media entertainment space, which is not sports analytics, but media and entertainment. So the thing here is the following. I mean, we have built one of the best, if not the best / most accurate system of a 3D tracking from multiple data sources. So capturing all those data points from a single camera. It's accurate enough so that if we depict this mesh, this skeletal tracking of a player in a virtual environment, think, you know, game, video game environment, the thing looks like an actual game. It looks real. So we are accurate enough that, you know, there are no players teleportations, like different weird movement patterns. So it allows us to create a very interesting, I would say very innovative product for media and entertainment, which is a virtual reality version of an actual game. Think about, you know, Champions League game transferred into a virtual reality. Okay, the question here is like, why would I do that? Why would you do that? What's the reason here? Well, there are quite a few interesting reasons. First of all, is you have unlimited camera perspectives available in the VR environment, so you can essentially take the player point of view. Imagine Lewandowski or Haaland scoring a goal from a particular situation. What you have in current nowadays TV is like a camera from behind, 30 meters behind, maybe the spider come above the ground or something like that. But here you can actually see the exact situation of the exact setup of the goal scorer. In that case, you know,
it offers a much more immersive experience for the viewer.
Exactly, that's the idea here. Yeah, you can use it in replays, you can use it in highlights, in the studio, etc. Then again, people can create their own personalized highlights. Yeah. I mean, people quite often follow players, not necessarily teams, and those players might not score a goal, but they might have this wonderful dribble where they dribble past three players, and then, you know, then that's just it. But you might want, as a fan of this particular player, you know, log into a web app or smartphone app, cut your own replay as if you are using, you know, PS5 and playing, you know, EA Sports franchise. You cut the replay and then just you can share it in the social media and claim, you know, or banter with your friends, you know. So those are very interesting opportunities. There's also opportunity of virtual stadium, you know, selling to people outside of the country.
I mean, the game is not on the pitch anymore. It can be on the moon or wherever else.
Exactly. So we will have a very interesting announcement, like MVP of this product in a few weeks from now. I will be happy to share it on my social and company social. So I invite you all to follow us. But generally speaking, what we are building here is the ability to transfer the game into a virtual environment, do it with high fidelity, just as if you will be playing the last version of the top sports franchise video game, and then bring it to the customers. So in that case, our business model will be B2B2C. this particular setup means that we will not be trying to open up a distribution network, but we will be eagerly offering this technology to already present distribution networks, which are owned by media companies and broadcasters.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, we're seeing this trend towards 3D imaging and providing more immersive experience to fans. So totally makes sense for somebody like you who's been very much part of the computer vision AI wave, the first wave that took the sports industry to also branch out into these other areas. Let's talk about that. You mentioned something which is coming up next. But what else are you looking forward to in the next 12, 18 months that you're excited by? One is, of course, the launch of the media platform, which offers a new range of solutions, but also maybe expanding into new markets or things like that.
Yes, we are expanding into. We are thinking about expanding. Obviously, there's a lot to be done. There's a lot to be done in what we are doing right now. There are like two areas where we can expand. Let's forget for a while the media entertainment space, which I covered. I mean, we'll be building the product here, but within the sports analytics space, there are two directions for us. First direction is to expand the product offering, increase the number of the features, what we can offer, what we currently have. The other is expand the number of the sports that we can cover. So we want to expand in both of those directions. Let's call it a current setup direction, which is increase the number of the statistics and event data that we can automatically generate. We are not that much interested in replicating already present pipelines. I mean, especially the pipelines that can be human annotated, because there's lots of development on our end to do automatically what can be done easily and is being done easily with the help of the humans. We are focusing more and more so on the analytics which are impossible to do by humans because they are too nuanced. Again, speeds or pressing occurrences or area scans are an examples of those statistics, and there is much more which we can provide and which no one else can provide because that they require 3D or a very detailed 2D understanding of the space. So this is the direction that we want to explore in football, American football, expand the product features, especially those that cannot be replicated by manual processes. The second part is expand the number of the sports, and we are looking at basketball and ice hockey and baseball, where we want to port our system, our system that works for football, American football, and we want to do that. We want to start doing that in the next year. We are also from the business perspective. We are. I'm happy to say that we are already profitable. So we can grow on our own, bootstrap the company. But we are also considering an investment round to accelerate all those processes. Because if you take all those into consideration, expanding the products, expanding in further sports, building a media and entertainment pillar, it means a lot of effort, lots of investment. So we are considering financing, but that's something that's we're fortunate enough to be able to do it on our own terms, not having to raise because of the runway issues. So those are our plans in a nutshell.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense, and also it's a great attribute to have right now, because everybody's running around scrambling for cash. If you have a good bit of runway left for you guys, that's amazing. And if you can get your funding round out there on your terms, then full power to you. So of course, if teams or potential clients want to reach out to you, they can find you, or as you said, potential investors as well. Please feel free to reach out. What is the best way for them to get in touch, Pavel? On LinkedIn, via email?
LinkedIn or email. My email is simple, Pavel@RespoVision. So my name and RespoVision. So I'm happy to talk to potential customers or investors. And we are extremely excited about the potential of our technology and the scalability of our technology. So we consciously have chosen, let's call it a path, which is much more difficult at the beginning, which means, you know, there is not, the technology is not proven. There is a question whether it is possible. Actually, I mean, like 3 years ago when we were first talking, we had this huge question. I mean, is it even possible to actually, you know, implement, you know, 3D tracking in a sports environment? I mean, I personally knew because I did it in the previous company that it's possible to do it in a factory environment, like to look at the products on the assembly line and assess whether they have faults or deficiencies. I mean, I did it, but sports is a totally different thing. So we embarked on this journey, and now after 2 years, I can safely say that it is possible. I mean, it is possible. The technology progressed. If not for that, that would be very difficult. But hopefully, the computer vision still progresses. I mean, things that are being enabled, and I'm even not talking about generative AI, because this is another avenue of the progress, also in the computer vision field or image generation. I'm not even talking about that. Like pure classic computer vision, where you have deep learning algorithms to increase the quality of the data capture, etc. It's still progressing, and you know it's really exciting space to be in. So to sum it up, it has been a fun ride, and I hope it will continue.
Yeah, I'm sure it will, and we'll be watching with keen eyes to see what else you guys get up to. All right, Pavel, it's been a pleasure talking to you. My last question, and the way I like to end this podcast, is always because I like to believe we're all sports fans first. So, what has been your favorite sporting moment, either one that you enjoyed as a fan or participated in as an athlete?
Oh, well, that is a very interesting question. I think I can name two sporting events. So one will be global, one will be local, because, you know. So the local one, this is a fun thing, but in Poland we follow ski jumping quite a lot because of successes and so I think we're one of the six countries in the world, including Germany, Austria, Norway, Slovenia, which are actually doing the sport, in Japan. So one of the favorite moments in the sport were we had this ski jumper like 10-12 years ago, who was called whose name was Adam Małysz, and he was one of the best ski jumpers in the world. So he had two seasons where he essentially flew 10 meters further than everyone else. So like in ski jumping, you fly like 90, 100, 120. So he essentially flew like 5 to 10 meters on every competition. And there was this competition, I think it was in Villingen. It's like a German city in the German Alps, where he beat the ski hill record. Jumping 151 and a half, I think, which was like 5 or 7 meters further than the previous record. And it was like, basically, if you ski jump, you land on the slope. That's the whole idea. Like, you jump and you fly over the slope and you land on the slope. So he flew far enough to land on a plane, actually, which was extremely dangerous because you just fall on the ground. But he stood it. So that was one of the favorite sporting moments. It was, you know, 2003, I believe. When it happened. And the second favorite sporting moment, I would say it was a 200 meters final on the Atlanta Olympics, where Michael Johnson beat the world record 1932, I think it was. It was beaten by the Bolt, but it was a beautiful game, beautiful run, because the second sprinter, I think it was Otto Boldon, he also beat a world record, but the camera didn't show him because Johnson was so further before him that the guy beating a world record wasn't even filmed when he was crossing the line, because he was Johnson was so far ahead. So it was like a really beautiful moment of, you know, like a world-class sporting performance, which was like mind-blowingly good. So I would call those two.
Good shout, Pavel. Two incredible moments. We don't get a lot of ski jumping and certainly 200 meters racing. Thanks for that. Thanks for sharing that. Hopefully, I know I'm going to go and Google those moments or YouTube maybe and watch them again. Maybe some of our audience will as well.
Pavel. Willingen, yeah, that will yield results on YouTube. So I suggest watching it.
For sure, we'll check it out. Pavel, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ron, and thank you everyone for listening to that.
Yeah, take care, guys. Thanks. I think we have one more episode, maybe a surprise episode, to bring home our AI in sports series. Otherwise, that's the last word from Pavel. Next month, we have a month focused on sports tech for women's sports and how technology is helping advance the cause of or increase viewership and improve performance in women's sports. Stay tuned for that. See you guys next month.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Tech All-Stars podcast with Rohan Malhotra. If you like our show, let us know and leave a review. And if you want to know more about us, check out sportstechx.com, where you can find our latest industry reports and updates. For a deeper dive into all things sports tech, check out our comprehensive database, SportsTechDB, at sportstechdb.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find us at SportsTechX on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Join us next time for another insightful conversation with a leader in sports tech.